July 5th, 2009. You're listening to the TeeFormers.com podcast. Folks, Hi Nights is 75 here. Just to let you know, we had a big long show come out of this week's recording. So needless to say, we're going to break this up into three different shows that are going to be sort of spread out and sent to you throughout this coming week. And needless to say, the first part is going to be our review of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen movie, as well as the part two will be the news and the usual wrap-up of the news for the week. And then the last part is our comic review, which features All Hail Megatron wrap-up, as well as Spotlight Metroplex. Joining me this week, we have Buivam, the infamous Z-Piper, Ender, and Kal-El Prime. And we're just going to go right into the action. So enjoy. Hello and welcome to the TeeFormers.com podcast. I am your host, Arne Hein, 1975, and I am joined by a full house this evening of all of our various hosts in the room. First up, we have the ever-known racist, Z Piper.
Now.
All right. We also have just atop of him in my Skype window is Buivam.
Hello.
And we have the comic book expert, and now with better microphone, Ender.
The infamous Ender.
And then all the way across the sea, hoping to take our country back for the Brits, is Kal-El Prime from the Moonbase 2.
I want an infamous Ender.
Is it available at Comic-Con?
Are they gonna that cost extra.
Probably won't get it over here. I'll probably have to import one as usual.
For twice as much.
Hey, Kal-El, I told you, just send me the money and I'll send you whatever you want. So,
it's that whole sending you money thing, I think that's the question.
Well, in fact, I just, not to go off on a tangent, but hold on here. You hear this? This is a plastic bag. Ooh, what's in the plastic bag?
Might be an ice shaker.
It's the last Transformers that I want. The last classic guy that I have not gotten yet. That will complete my classic collections, not including anything that was remolded from Cybertron. It's Darkwind, and I found it at a Toys R Us. So, and I will be opening him throughout the show and whenever you guys are talking. So, in fact. Just for proof, you hear that? See, he lights up. So, anyhow.
Yeah, lighting up works well on the radio.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, anyhow. So,
I could actually see that, but no, I didn't.
For the next hour or so, it will be pretty much, I presume, everybody complaining about the movie and Anthony playing devil's advocate and defending the movie at every particular point. But, with that being said, let's just get an overall count of what everyone thinks of the movie really quickly in the room on a scale from 1 to 5, with 5 being awesome. So, Buivam, what would you think? What would you rate the movie?
I'd give it a 3.75.
All right. Jace, we already know what you think.
Yep.
And then Ender, what do we have? What would be your rating on a scale from 1 to 5?
Well, in the 1 to 5, I'm going to have to go with what I gave it in my review, which anyone can go and read over on TeeFormers.com, which is a 2.5, which is a total ambivalence. I feel completely conflicted about it. I enjoyed it, but it was bad.
And Kal-El, I actually listened to your entire 2-hour, or I should say hour in a YouTube video, which I actually converted to audio so I could listen at work. But what would you say if you had to rate this?
If you'd asked me when I came out of the cinema, I would have given it 5 out of 5, but I think hindsight does a lot for this movie. And as it stands now, it's probably on a 2.5 or a 3.
Really?
If I could split this movie up into the first half and the first half would get 4 out of 5 and the second half would get 2. I don't know. Maybe I need to go see it again, but there is something about this movie that over time it's just not sitting well with me. Mm-hmm. Especially, and I think maybe it might have something to do with the fact that now that I've seen it and I'm not averse to spoilers anymore, I'm going back and I'm reading all of these like original supposed treatments and things like that and just realizing just how much awesome this movie could have been.
All right, well, before we go off on that real quick, so that's basically, so the majority of the room is pretty much, Jace, what would you give it? Be pretty much what, a 2 or 3 as well?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a scale of 1 to 5, I'd stretch and give it a 3. You know, I'll be a little kinder than I'm typically, you know, and give it a 3.
Okay. Well, before we go into that, I want to make a couple of quick programming notes. First off, I would like to remind individuals, I get the occasional letter from some fan of ours that basically is asking us to clean things up. But I would like to stress that this is a PG-13 podcast. And
Christ's sake, we know.
Well, the reason is that basically, you know, it comes down to, I'm not going to try and censor you guys because censoring, it just seems to ruin the whole mood. And we actually had the F-bomb sort of slip out last week because I had some pre-recording from the theater. So, I'm just going to say, just if you feel comfortable enough for your kid to watch the movie in the theater, you should be comfortable enough to listen to this podcast. So just use that as a sort of like a scale there. Other than that, I'm not going to go proceed to censor these guys too much because it seems to basically just, you know, it's their comedy. And if you try and censor your comedy, then you become basically a bunch of bleeps and bloops on Comedy Central. So. That also be
plus you can't stop Z, so
yeah, exactly. Well, thank you. I was trying to find a way to say that politely, but I just want to make note of that because I did receive an email about last week. So, but I just want to say, if you're looking for a more G-rated version of the podcast, then hey, check out the Moonbase 2 guys because they're fairly clean. So. Other than that, I believe I will be off the next 2 weeks, doing family picnic stuff. So we will return with, T-Formers 2.0. Bacon and the guys don't do a show of their own over the next 2 weeks on the 26th. So please mark your calendars, appropriately. That being said, before we get into the news, let's just, I'm sure you guys have a lot to rant about of the movie and whatnot. At this point, I've seen it 3 times and I'm still loving it. But obviously there's been a lot of talk. A lot of things have come out since the release of the movie, and the movie has definitely generated not only a buttload of money, but also a buttload of criticism and arguments. And it seems to be that either fans absolutely love this and it's the greatest thing, or it's the absolute worst thing since Phantom Menace. So with that being said, I'm just going to open the floors and let you guys sort of give your thoughts 1 week after the release of the second Transformers movie.
Going to hand out the rotten fruit now?
Well, that also gives me time to also take Darkwing out of the box. So, seriously, what'd you guys think? I mean, I'm still liking the movie, and of course, I pretty much have been listening to everybody tell their sort of opinions in retrospect, and a lot of it I'm just brushing off as like, wow, that's being really nitpicky about the movie. Now, of course, certain people, you know, like details, and I understand that, and that's completely fine, but it really does seem to be the movie that's dividing the fan continuum to either, you know, the left side or the right side. So what do you guys think of that?
I think it was kind of inevitable after the last movie, too. I think there was a bigger, like, we have to love this kick in the fandom for the first movie. And this time it's just like anything that was gimmicky or that didn't work was much more frowned upon. I think so. I think a lot of people who kind of didn't say anything about problems they had in the first one are really kind of coming out of the woodwork to bag on this one. Even though I think this one's better, I'm in a fundamental way, in like an I can sit down and watch and enjoy it way, which is that it doesn't have an hour of extraneous plot, but it is just full of holes, and it's really it's hard to watch and pay attention to. It's all over the place. It's really rambling. And, you know, the criticisms it's getting are deserved. Now, on the other hand, there was no way I was going to go see the first one in the theater. Excuse me, more than once. This one I will, because I felt it was still enjoyable. Michael Bay is entirely right on the subject of he, you know, has a tendency to make things that are fun to sit down and watch in a theater. The reason they get torn apart by critics is that there's really not much substance to them. This actually had to be pointed out to me, but I kind of – a lot of things bothered me during the movie, and I think it was the plot holes and stuff like, you know, what do we bring Megatron back to life with? The Allspark Shard. What killed Megatron in the last movie? The Allspark. Well, you know, why do we want Sam? He has information from an Allspark Shard. This information is presumably not contained in the Allspark Shard the Decepticons have. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not paying attention to. I mean, to your, like, you know, you want to throw this Deus Ex Machina all over the place, and they like.
Do we think that perhaps the writer's strike might have caused an issue with the writing of this movie or not?
No, this is really typical of their writing. Honestly,
I don't know. I would give Orsi and Kurtzman and the other fella whose name I can never remember the benefit of the doubt on this one. I think I would love to sit down and read the actual script for this movie as they wrote it and see, because it seems like there has been a concerted point, especially from Orsi over the last couple of weeks, to kind of start shifting some of the blame, and whether that's right or wrong, and regardless of who's responsible for what, I think Kurtzman and Orsi, I mean, they said it themselves at the end of the first movie, we're not coming back unless we've got a story to tell. And I think they had a story to tell, and I think that story, I don't think they're incompetent storytellers. You look at Star Trek, and that's not, yeah, okay, it's got plot holes in it, but they're not as gaping and as huge as Revenge of the Fallens. The big problem with this is the first one had a tone. It had an ideal. It was a boy and his car. That was the whole thing that Spielberg set it up on, and that's what the film was generally about. It was Sam and Bumblebee. And then everything else was extraneous, and you know, you didn't necessarily need all of it, but it was there to sort of help drive what semblance of plot it had. This one, it didn't have that. It didn't have that fundamental link. There wasn't a Transformer and a human that related with each other. And it just kind of felt like this jumbled mass of ideas, which...
You don't think that was basically the whole idea of, you know, going away from college, being away from home, that was what... you know, Orsi was saying before, or Michael Bay was saying before, somebody was saying that this movie's going to...
Yeah, no, that was there. In fact, so I'd say some of the most compelling moments in the whole movie were actually between Sam and his parents. Because, you know, I really feel like they wanted it to be like this theme, but it really stayed contained to itself. Like, the leaving home thing was really an issue, like, with his mom and with his dad. And then there's, like, these giant robots standing around, and it's like, what? You know, they didn't seem to have anything to do with it. They wanted it to have something to do with it, but they really didn't, and that really wasn't conveyed. And, you know, I'm going to take back something I actually said a second ago, because I was thinking about it in terms of the writer's strike. I'd say what very possibly happened with a lot of the rambling of the movie and the plot holes is that, to my understanding, they kind of submitted, like, okay, this is our rough idea to Paramount and to Michael Bay before the strike. And rather than not use any of that time during the strike, they started making the movie without a script, without a proper one. I mean, that's just kind of what happened. And so you have Michael Bay sitting there with an outline filling in the blanks. And what ends up happening is, like, you've shot this scene, you've set this up, this has already been filmed, and now these things are set in stone. And then the writers sit down to actually write the script. And if you have a causality problem between point A and point B that you hadn't resolved when you wrote the outline, you just have to suck it up. Because you have to get, it's, you know, from point A to point B, period. You have to have that scene. Such and I think that's where you get a lot of these things like, why, you know, there's two Allspark shards flying around and they're here, they're there, they're in Egypt, they're, you know, this museum, they're in college. And it's just like, because they were really locked into like kind of a broad idea that maybe would have been more refined. I mean, I can't say if that's what actually happened, but I'd say if there was an effect of the writer's strike on the product, that it probably had more to do with, you know, need for adherence to the previous, you know, what was had already been done.
Not to mention the fact as well that you've also got to bear in mind that at some point during the early production stages of this, you can imagine the Hasbro representatives basically banging down on Michael Bay's door saying, look, we need the characters now. We need to know what you're doing.
Right.
And if Kurtzman and Orsi aren't there, and, you know, I mean, there's the, you know, there's the, whether it's their work or not, let's just say, for example, it is. There was the original outline, which basically suggested it was going to be Hot Rod and Ultra Magnus were going to be the two, you know, new ones that were going to come into it. So you've got, you know, you've got this original one, but then Kurtzman and Orsi are out of the picture, can't be contacted, can't be involved in it, and Bay says, I want Skids and Mudflap. At some point, that has to be locked in and approved by both Michael Bay as the director and Hasbro, because Hasbro has to get the toys out. Otherwise, the movie falls apart and Hasbro, you know, kind of doesn't get what they want. So it could very well be the case that Kurtzman and Orsi just come back and, yeah, just like what we're saying there, that they come back and suddenly what they originally envisioned has been twisted beyond all recognition. And then as writers, they then have to make that fit. And it's like, it's coming back and trying to assemble a jigsaw that you just, you know, you
right.
might not necessarily have had anything to do with at the beginning.
Yeah, there's a lot of retconny feeling to some of the stuff in there. You know, the new, and I got to say the little like love crisis they came up with, the I can't say I love you thing, I thought was just like so lame. I just like Sam is like the least fear of commitment person on earth. It was just like you've been dating for 2 years, where you're at. Like you should be like measuring ring sizes. Tell me this scrawny kid's been going out with her for 2 years and like, you know, I couldn't buy it at all. Every time it came in, I think in the review, what I said is whenever you see a love scene coming up with Shia and Michaela, just that's your cue to go to the bathroom. It's a long movie and you're going to need a break.
Well, one of the comments one of our friends made was that it seems that there seems to be no chemistry between basically, you know, Megan Fox and LaBeouf, you know, that basically she yeah. doesn't seem to be really throwing out all of her acting when she's doing the love scene.
Well, that she just doesn't really like it's evidence in her body motions that she's not really into Shia as a person. Kind of like, you know, when the geeky greasy guy wants to come up and tell you about his D&D character, you're just kind of like, ooh, yeah.
Okay, well, do they remember
she's. She's chasing after him all over the world in this movie, and he seems vaguely indifferent about it most of the time. And it's kind of a real stark contrast to the last movie where instead of Wheelie, it seemed like he might hump her leg at any moment. So,
well, let's back up here. So is the movie really that bad, or as fans, are we just being too hypocritical because we are fans?
I say just the opposite. I say the only reason we like this movie and are going to buy it on DVD and probably enjoy it a few times is that we are fans. I think this movie is really only enjoyable in a longer term sense by fans. I think for me, it was, you know, I really enjoyed watching Prime throw Decepticons around the screen. That like made my day. That was like the most enjoyable part of the movie for me. But I think for ordinary people, this is really just kind of a bad action movie with very little to offer except the explosions. And quite frankly, a lot of that action is so jittery and thrown around. Like, I don't even understand. I mean, you can hardly tell what's going on sometimes, though it is it is more coherent in that sense than the first film. But I say just the opposite. I say our fandom is what compels us to like this, yeah, as opposed to.
I'd completely agree with that. I think for me, the two big problems that I've currently got with this movie is one is I wonder, and I've never gone to watch this yet with a non-Transformers fan, or at least somebody who has a vague concept of what's going on. I honestly wonder how many of the normal movie-going audience just let everything slide, because there's no explanation in this movie for anything. Oh, Alice is there. She's a pretender. Okay, well, we've seen Terminator. We'll just accept that one. Right. Okay, these six Constructicon vehicles can transform into a huge robot. Why? They just can. Okay, this Matrix thing, it can power this big machine and send Sam to heaven and bring him back to life. Why? And it just does. There's no explanation given for anything in this movie other than Jetfire talking about the big plot machine at the end.
And I'd like to point out, remember we discussed Jetfire talking about the plot two weeks ago. Last time I was on. Did you notice John Turturro literally stopped the movie for an exposition moment? He like literally says like, okay, condense it down, break it into this, beginning, middle, end. And it was literally like, we are now pulling the movie over to the side so we can tell you what's going on, because there's no way in hell you could possibly have any idea.
Well, it was funny you said that. Actually, when we were talking last, actually, I went out and actually bought the comics for the movie so I could actually read the plot. And, you know, I could see what you were talking about, and I knew that that was going to be the case when with Jetfire came on screen. So, but yeah. I just...
Like, insert giant exposition here. I was waiting for Leonard Nimoy to come out of the ice cave and tell them the rest of it.
Yeah, that really seems to bother you with those movies now, doesn't it? With them sort of just stopping and just doing the...
I just really feel like you know you're doing something wrong when it's like, and now we have to stop and explain because we cannot integrate it into the story.
But is that such a bad thing, though? I mean,
it is. Well, it means... Honestly, what it means is that your story is probably too complicated. This isn't like an hour and a half to 2 hour medium. This is a visual medium. You're supposed to be able to tell your story visually as possible.
Right, but
they open with a monologue every movie. They have to stop. I mean, they might as well have the Star Wars crawl. They got to start the movie with like, okay, we have to stop and explain everything that's going on to you because we can't make it work. And then you get to the middle of the movie, you've been sitting there for an hour and a half, and they're like, okay, we told you nothing because we've been too busy blowing stuff up. So now we have to stop and tell you the plot. And it's like, you know, they might as well give out a pamphlet with the movie that says like, okay, this is what's going on.
I think,
and you're not supposed to have to do that. That's why that bothers me. This isn't a book. You know, you're not supposed to have to stop and read the plot.
Well, I think that's just, you could equate that a little bit to my base specific style of editing. I think that's his style is that he wants to...
No, that's BS. You can sit and watch Bad Boys or watch Armageddon and nobody has to stop and be like, here's, you know.
Well, those two movies, in my opinion, were crap to begin with. So I can't really, I never saw Bad Boys.
I would take Armageddon over this any day of the week.
Really? Oh, come on. Armageddon was terrible.
Armageddon,
it was so long overdrawn. You want to talk about points that make no sense, you know. Oh, he's got space sickness or space madness. Oh, we're just running around. It's, you know, there's slow motion of kids going into a storm cellar for the third time for no reason. It's, you know, there's absolutely no plot.
Dude, all that stuff that you just said makes total sense within the context of the movie. There were no gaping plot holes in that movie.
Exactly.
And what would
exactly?
Movie?
No, that movie had beautiful structure. It was put together really well.
Oh, I hate.
Sorry.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I hate Armageddon. Beyond the just, you know, subpar actors that they had there.
I think almost generally, though, you know, when you look at something like Armageddon or Bad Boys, it's a linear film. The problem is that both Star Trek and both Transformers have both got a semblance of, well, something happened a very, very, very long time ago, or something happened in the future. And so, inevitably, rather than the characters making the discovery for themselves, they just stumble across this individual who knows everything and then just, like, fills it. With Armageddon, you don't have that. I mean, the principle of the movie is set up in the first 10 seconds. There's an asteroid coming to Earth. You have to blow it up.
Yeah, and the period. Festival
does. There's no backstory for the asteroid.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing, is that the whole point of that movie is very simplistic, where I think, you know, everybody was complaining with the first movie, we want to see more robots talking, we want to have more action, we want to have more of a backstory.
All right, robots and talking is a matter of character, well, no, though. That's not like, that doesn't mean I want to see Jetfire read me the litany.
No, but I mean, but the thing was, is that, you know, at some point, sometimes you have to have a character sort of, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a character sort of bring you up to speed, because if you look at a lot of movies, at some point, like I was just watching Return of the Jedi on TV the other night, and there was a lengthy dialogue when Leia was rescuing Han from Jabba's palace, what was going on. I mean, you know, it's okay to have a character stop and sort of tell you, hey, this is what's going on.
When is that going on in Jabba's palace? Okay, I'm asking for the technical thing here, because I think you're mischaracterizing what we're complaining about.
Yeah, I think he's over exaggerating as well, because he's referring, I'm imagining, to when she breaks a Han out of the carbonite, and it's like five sentences to bring him up to speed. It's not a screeching halt to the movie. It's like, hey, you've been frozen. Luke's a Jedi. You're in Jabba's palace. We're here to get you out.
And what I was going to point out is there is a screeching halt or two in those movies. For one thing, they have to open with the crawl of the, you know, this is what's been going on between movies, blah, 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 blah. In a lot of ways, that's a failing. You really shouldn't have to do that. This is actually like the classic example. The one people make jokes about is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi is the classic deliverer of too much exposition. He shows up and he tells you a whole bunch of crap that happened before. He does it pretty much every movie, I think. You know, in Return of the Jedi, he sits down in the log and he tells Luke about his dad. Now, but that's actually a short, compelling scene delivered by a really good actor. But it is still that you shouldn't. That is an example of like you really. But see, you shouldn't have to do that.
I don't mind that, and maybe that's just because I saw as a little kid. Well, because I saw as a little kid, and you know that it to me that was cool seeing obviously Ghost Obi-Wan talking with Luke. But to me, that didn't seem to do anything and did not deter anything from the movie. And to me, Jetfire really wasn't that bad, other than the fact that, you know, there's a couple of extra talking points that we really could take out and then get to the point of him actually, you know, telling what's going on.
I'll tell you what the problem with Jetfire is versus that is I think Jetfire, along with Spock, talked about twice to three times as long.
Right.
And
maybe
you didn't really come out of it understanding any of the why. You really still were like, okay, that's what's going on. It still doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like you have no sense of like, okay, you know, he introduces and kills off the original primes in like two sentences. And it's like this whole other giant story that's necessary to prop this one up. And they're just not going to tell you. And it really feels like, because it's not there. There is no story there. There is no why. It's just meaningless kibble to hold up this like house of cards that they've built to hold up the action scenes.
All right, I want to get Weevum's very not even had a chance to speak up yet, so I want to make sure we're getting everybody's opinion. So you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh. Share your thoughts. I want to make sure we're getting everybody's viewpoint here.
Hi, thanks for having me on this week.
No, seriously, what did you think of the movie?
So I enjoyed the movie, and I went with three other people, and they all enjoyed it as well. They went in thinking what it was going to be. I mean, there's a reason why it came out in the summer and not during Christmas time when they take their families to go. They take it as it is. It's a summer blockbuster movie, and I've written this before where putting the name a Michael Bay film is an easy way of saying there's going to be so much stuff exploding in this movie and so much action that it's going to get to the point where you may not know what's going on, but really the question is, do you care?
Well,
I got to call BS on that whole concept because, you know, back in the day, I mean, like, think back to like Die Hard. Die Hard was a dumb action movie, but it was good. And we expected our movies to be good then. And there was no excuse, you know, there wasn't any of this like, oh, it's a summer movie, it's okay for it to suck. I just want stuff to blow up. Nobody said
that. That's not the point. That's not what I'm trying to say. That's not the point. I'm saying that you're not expecting all of the movies to suck. I'm just saying that you went into this movie knowing exactly what was going to happen. You knew there was going to be more robots. You knew what's going to happen. And, I mean, most people panned Wolverine because of the fact that it was that it didn't really make much sense throughout the entire movie. But you do expect certain movies to be good. But did you really expect Transformers to be the most thought-provoking film you have ever watched in your life?
Yeah, I expect any time somebody slaps $200 million on a table and employs 10,000 people for 2 years that they're going to produce a quality product. I think what could we possibly have in this country that makes us think like, yeah, sometimes things just suck and we cope?
Well,
I mean,
again,
like, is that really the artistic?
But not everybody thinks it sucks, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I don't think it sucks. I was enjoyed. I had a good time. And I, you know, if there was a whole mile of dialogue, you guys would be complaining, oh my God, it's like, you know, Casablanca. There's so much dialogue in it. You don't know what to do.
It's supposed to be a balance.
You can't go on the complete other end of the spectrum. 2 years ago, Warner Brothers slaps down $250 million in director X-Men Superman Returns slaps it down and says go make a Superman movie, and he says okay, I'm going to make the Superman movie that I want to make, and it's not going to have any action, it's not going to have any explosions, it's going to be this thought-provoking thing of I'm all alone, and it was boring. The problem is the question that you have to ask is Michael Bay a hindrance to this franchise then? If people are going in only assuming if it's got Michael Bay in the title, then it's not going to be anything other than a popcorn explosion movie. Because, look, we all know Transformers, at the end of the day, it's a kid's cartoon / toy line. But do we want more from our movies than what Michael Bay has delivered? And if we say yes, then ultimately, if the overall assumption from the studio is that Michael Bay will deliver us a great popcorn film, then we should be making an outcry against Michael Bay, not against, you know, how bad this movie was written or anything like that. But at the end of the day, the studio isn't going to do that because, as we'll get to when we talk about the news, this movie is making a crap ton of money, and they will go back to Michael Bay regardless of what anybody else thinks.
Well, I mean, that's just the thing. I think the movie is – you're not going into this movie – expecting, you know, Schindler's List. You're going in for lots of explosions, really good eye candy. And to me, the reason why a lot of people said the new Star Trek worked so well is because there wasn't the Star Trek technobabble that was in the, you know, the previous movies where we have to stop and explain what's going on here. So
they did have to do that. It was just done well. That's what that director, J.J. Abrams, brought to that movie is he does those things well. And that's kind of the point. Like, you know, I keep hearing over and over again, we're saying, like, well, what did you expect? And it's like, quality.
Well,
I expected quality.
But see, that's a fallacy of your argument there.
No. But I'm flipping that right back at you. Why would we ever say, oh, but it's only supposed to be so good?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it is good and I enjoy the movie. And basically, you have a little bit of a fallacy of argument there, because you're saying that just because you're saying that these are these few points that I disagree with, that the movie is crap. And I don't think the movie is that bad. As, you know, granted, I have some issues with it, and I definitely, you know, if somebody knows how to make.
But there they are. There are the caveats. You know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, this and this and that and this and this and those and this and this didn't make any sense and that sucked and that didn't work and this was dumb, but I liked it.
But that
and it's like, is that the end all?
Basically your opinion, right? I mean, you're like saying this sucked, this sucked, that sucked, that sucked.
No, this doesn't make any sense,
but I enjoyed it.
But I'm saying even the people who like it still have the same list of complaints.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But then those things are excuses. Like it. It's not a, you know.
Well, no, I mean.
Yeah, but you can say that for every movie then. It doesn't, like, not all movies are flawless. Most people say, I like this movie.
No, things have flaws. Everything should have. It will have flaws. I mean, nothing's perfect.
Exactly.
You know?
So
there's
I don't understand why
about everything.
Hold on, guys. Everybody's got to talk at once.
Say, Ender,
breathe in. Happy thoughts. Transformers toys. Here, listen to Darkwing.
Okay. This is Forever Everland. I fly when I complain.
All right. Well, I don't want to go on and belabor the point. I think that these are one of those movies that either you liked it or you don't. It's basically like, yes, is
terrible. No, I liked it, but it's not well made.
Well, you liked
it. I'm not going to say it's well made just because I liked it. I like the Masters of the Universe movie. I like Howard the Duck, but I know they're crap, and I'm not going to say they're anything else.
Well, I like Masters of the Universe, and for its, you know, it doesn't necessarily hold up towards today's standards, but at the time,
well,
it was
Frank
really
Langella is God as Skeletor. That's the only thing that movie has going for. Yeah.
I think, to be honest, though, I think for me, in terms of Revenge of the Fallen, the biggest problem I've got with it is exactly the same problem. Well, actually, it's more of a problem now with Revenge of the Fallen than it was with the first movie, which is that ultimately, what Michael Bay has done with these two movies is he's taken the concept of the Autobots versus the Decepticons, and he's turned it into the Autobots and the military versus the Decepticons. And the big problem I think he's done with this film is that he hasn't made the Decepticons matter. The first one is, it's the build-up. It's the whole, like, well, what if Megatron gets out? Oh, you're sitting there in the cinema and you're watching it and you're like, I can't wait till Megatron gets out. And he gets out and he does an awful lot of damage. You know, he busts out, he kills Jazz, and the humans, you know, they feel like they're on the ropes. At no point in this movie, with any of the characters and any of the subplot, did you ever feel like, you know, when Prime dies halfway through the movie, you're like, right, okay, he's gone, but don't worry, we've got half a movie to bring him back.
Right.
Well, then the whole movie becomes about bringing him back.
Exactly. But that's the problem, is then at the end of the movie, when there's this big battle going on, the Decepticons are constantly at bay. They're never at any point in this movie an effectual, like, opponent. And I think that's what Bay has to get right in the next one.
I think at the end, when there's a ton of them, they are.
All right, well, then let's bring this around and say, what could we do to fix, you know, the third movie? Because, you know, I look at it this way.
You want to talk about the third movie? I mean, I'd say what they need to do is make the Decepticons, I mean, we're talking just about, make the Decepticons more dynamic and give them, I mean, I think the most interesting parts of this movie, the Decepticons, were just Megatron and Starscream talking to each other.
Right, and that's
the villains are always supposed to be really dynamic, and the Fallen was this huge failing of this movie. Like, every time he came on screen, it was just like, and now I'm upstaging the interesting characters. It was like, who are you? What are you doing here? Like, I finally got Megatron and Starscream. I finally have my villains, and there's could be Decepticons all over the place, but all I'm getting is you.
Well, and that would be one of my major complaints, is that I don't think you need the Fallen to actually have this movie. I think you could have cut him out completely.
Yeah, just the Fallen didn't work at all. I agree.
And, you know, and Megatron could have just been trying to get the stuff from the sun. But that being said, I look at it this way. I liked the Star Trek Nemesis because I thought it was pretty much what every fan wanted and had been asking people to ask, you know, from Star Trek people. We want a movie with the Next Generation crew and a lot of action sequences in space, and at some point we want the Enterprise to ram into another ship. We got that, and everyone hated it. So I have a feeling now we're going to go the other way, where they're going to try and make this lengthy dialogue Transformers movie.
No,
Transformers
that's 3, never going to happen.
And then everyone's going to complain about that. So
you know what? The thing is, though, with the Fallen, all the Fallen needed in this movie was one scene where he shows up on Earth and takes out everybody. And then you have the scene where Optimus Prime gets brought back, he combines with Jetfire, and he's the guy who takes him down. But the problem is, we've got exposition scene, which was, I can't do anything until Prime is dead, and then I'm going to do something, but I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to activate the powerful machine, which was more G1 reference than anything.
I know.
Oh. Was the hilarity of the mega weapon will be at full
power. The sun crusher, you know what I mean?
Like, and it was like, that was hilarious. I was absolutely howling, but the Fallen becomes totally ineffectual because he does nothing. He teleports and then teleports away and then dies.
Yeah, and then Prime gets a jetpack and hands him his skid blades.
all he needed was one scene, and it's like, and the problem is they didn't give him that scene, and therefore the Fallen, irrespective of whether or not you've read the Dreamwave comics and you know that this guy is like one of the original Transformers that was created and was corrupted by like a demonic devil force, and turned evil, and then I don't know, somehow ends up in the movie.
Say that in there?
Hasbro said that he was a singular entity, that there is one Fallen throughout the entire
movie. I don't think Michael Bay or Orson and Kurtzman are adhering to that when they wrote this.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I do not get the impression that this is the flaming, useless, four-issue Dreamwave.
Reincarnated. Saying that, and you know, you take that with a pinch of salt.
Well, let me wrap. Let's try and wrap this up here because we do have to get to some news here. But really quickly, and I mean really quickly, what would you guys do to actually make the next movie better? What would you tell Michael Bay and the Transformers people for the next movie? Here's what you need to do to fix it:
more character, less dialogue. there has to be something behind it. There really wasn't any of that. I'd say make sure the same story sort of encompasses everything and is coherent. I mean, that sounds so general, but like that was really a fundamental problem in both of these movies, and especially this one, is there really wasn't, you know, it wasn't always clear why we were doing what we were doing.
So a better story and a better script is.
Yeah, I think Michael Bay is very possibly the greatest action director who ever lived, and I would never take that away from him or say. I mean, like, the guy works hard, the guy does a good job at what he does, but I think he needs to be backed by
a quality script,
really solid script. I think if you give Michael Bay a great script, he won't like tear it apart and make it into garbage. But I think if you give him something mediocre, that has what he wants in it for the things he wants to do, he'll just make it and move on. I think a lot of the reason Star Trek had some qualities, I think J.J. Abrams is somebody who gets a mediocre script and says, okay, here's the meat and this is what I'm going to use.
Right.
And I think that had a lot to do with like a really good cast and a really good director. Whereas, you know, and Michael Bay, you know, what he does at making action movies is a fantastic director, but he really needs to be supported. And I don't think he's had that in either movie.
Really, I would just be, you know, I agree with everything that was said. So the only other thing that I would add to it would be is that I would like to see, you know, him curtail his complete infantile desire to place in, you know, scenes like Devastator has golden balls and just other little lowbrow, you know, below the belt kind of humor and whatnot. And the over stereotyping of the characters. I just, you know, one of the posts on our thing that we did last week, you know, one of the posters said that, you know, he would be completely happy, you know, as far as accepting, you know, the twins and the little, you know, Wheelie as Joe Pesci, you know, that kind of stuff. If when they came down, you know, in addition to scanning, you know, the vehicle forms, they like downloaded a TV program or a movie or something and then, you know, learned to speak off of that because they have their own language. So obviously they learned it down here. So, and to me, I was like that. To me, that's a very elegant solution simply because that way you can have different accents, you know, like if Jetfire downloads, you know, the Fawlty Towers, you know, series and things along those lines. And, you know, we got, you know, I think his example for the twins was like In Living Color and whatnot. I would totally buy and be behind that stuff at that point. But him just doing those
random things. It would be context that would make it acceptable and make sense.
Well,
right.
Just to clarify the reason why I was talking about, open up the show with Jason, you know, jokingly calling him a racist, is that, you know, we were discussing the stereotypes last week. You know, Jason was trying to point out, you know, how far he was expecting them to go with the stereotypes, and somebody thought he was actually trying to be racist. And we clarified that in the forums, but it's just one of those things where, you know, the stereotypes, I think, have got to go. And I think that's problematic with, as you've said before, Jace, that Michael Bay tries to make one movie that it covers every possible demographic that he could possibly get. And with that, he puts in everything that he could possibly think of, which may include stereotypes to relate to certain types of people. And I think that, you know, they just need to be taken out of Transformers. And granted, the movie might be a little more serious, but I think that's, you know, sloppy writing. And a lot of people have said this too. That the twins just, you know, everyone loves Wheelie. Wheelie seems to work well. The voice acting seems to work well. Yet the twins is completely fails on every aspect simply because they don't seem to work. And it just seems to be sloppy writing.
Yeah, well, writing wise, the RC and Kurtzman have pretty much totally disavowed Skids and Mudflap.
Oh, really? Have they said
Yeah,
something?
Everything. I'm sure they're contractually obligated not to say anything bad about the movie, but they've pretty much said, like, they are an example of how little writer control there is. Like, they've basically, like, said, like, this is not us. We did not write that. We have nothing to do with it. And I think one of them may have gone so far as to call their portrayal unfortunate.
I don't know if any of you read it.
I wrote a whole editorial on this for ENI. I felt very strongly about them. You know,
I definitely want to come to some sort of conclusion because I think, Andrew, your point is that you feel that it was just a terrible movie, even though you enjoyed it. It was a bad movie on all fronts. I'm thinking, you know, and it may just be because I'm the diehard fan that it wasn't as bad as you're saying, because I think
I'm a diehard fan, but I'm the diehard fan who went to film school and I brook a little failure from big budget movies.
Well, I mean, but see, would you say that, you know, and I went to art school, so I'm very critique on the animation series. Wouldn't you say that you're a little bit jaded because of that, because you went to art school?
Well, is it jaded, or is it like, I kind of feel like it's more like, you know why people are complaining about that? It's this, and I can see it, and it's like third day of film school. They tell you not to do this.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of mold breaking that goes on, but a lot what I really learned, especially in film, is that it's like you have to have a reason to do it. And if you don't, it's usually just going to make your audience leave and feel dissatisfied with something. And I think a lot of what's happened is people come out and go, "That was great," and then they go home and they go right on Rotten Tomatoes and go, "Yeah, it was a 2."
Well, no, I mean,
out of 10. You know what I mean? Like, it's not sitting well. And there is an aspect to, like, you know, Independence Day was, you know, people went and saw that 10 times. It was hugely popular. It's widely acknowledged as a terrible movie now.
And see Independence Day.
I think that's kind of where these things go.
When I first saw Independence Day, I didn't see Independence Day for several years until I was in college. And when I saw it, I'm like, this movie is so slow. Get rid of Will Smith and all this, oh, I'm dealing with wanting to marry and stuff. And I thought that movie was maybe how you're feeling with Transformers. I expected a lot more from it, and I felt that Independence Day was just completely dropping the ball. It was just
I think in a few years that's how we're going to feel about both. I mean, I think the first one has really shown that people are look back on these things negatively, and I think it's going to be worse with this one in a lot of ways. I think people liked it more and are going to come down harder.
Well, that's just the way of any movie.
You know, you watch Independence Day now, it's just like, oh my God, why would I? Why did I even sit through this? I saw this 3 times in the theater. I sat in a theater on July 4th in, like, you know, 1995, and we were standing up cheering.
Yeah, but then
it's
again,
a bad movie.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, but see, the best example I could point out here is that Star Trek IV, the Voyage Home, was the one that was quoted as the biggest Star Trek movie at its time, the biggest.
It made the most money today.
If you don't count inflation with, you know, the new Star Trek, and yet people always say, "Oh, that horrible Star Trek movie with the whales." Yet that was the one that turned so many people on Star Trek. Because
I have never heard the horrible Star Trek movie with the whales.
Oh, that's what everybody
I hear about Star Trek 5 being a problem all the time, which I don't agree
with.
Well,
that's, and believe me, I will actually.
It's because it was a character piece in space.
I will argue with you on that one, because I actually think that was probably a great, could have been an awesome movie if they actually.
5's one of my favorites. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Really?
I'm just saying, I love 5.
Really? You're not pulling my chain here.
I am not pulling your chain. I love 5.
All right,
the interaction between Spock, McCoy, and Kirk in that movie is worth the price of admission.
Okay,
they could have had them sit in the brig for that movie, and I would have enjoyed it.
Well, see,
that was so well written and used so much of what had been done over the years to make, like, a really solid fun character piece. But that's
kind of do you think ultimately then that's what Revenge of the Fallen and the original live action movie lacks? There isn't that
it
relationship.
It lacks those things. You know what I mean? Pulling out my fan wankery here. When I wrote it to be one of those PG-13 animated movies they do, direct to DVD. I wrote a Transformers script of that variety. There is a very Kirk, Spock, McCoy kind of relationship going on with Prime, Prowl, and Grimlock, where it's the one person in the middle kind of who's everybody's best friend standing between them, keeping them from arguing. And it makes for good dialogue. It makes for good character. It makes you know, when you're standing next to somebody you know and you're having a conversation, exposition sometimes comes out and doesn't sound like exposition. It sounds like two people talking. Exposition only sounds bad when it's like, this is Jim, the new guy, and we're going to explain how everything works to him. You know?
I mean, ultimately, the problem we have is that as Transformers fans, we want the Optimus Prime, Prowl, you know, Jazz, whatever relationship, or Grimlock, or whoever. But at the end of the day, the first movie's been successful. The second movie's being massively successful now. They're going to keep with the formula that Sam is always going to be the main guy. And the problem is they haven't ever really given him anybody to work off of except his parents.
Right.
And
his parents are great character actors too. And they really, they really help with that. I mean, those scenes are solid.
Yeah.
Kevin Dunn is my favorite actor in this movie, man. I mean, like, I'm a parent, and I got to say, like, him talking to Sam a couple of those times, like, I was misting up. I'm sitting in a Transformers movie misting up. Yeah. But, you know.
He is, I mean, the parents are my favorite ones out of the first one, and the parents are the favorite ones out of the second one. And those scenes with him in college were hysterical because you go, yeah, okay, it's the whole thing of the
pot brownie and his mom was a little overdone.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that made her look stupid more than anything else. But his response to her and the way he played off them was brilliant. And the problem is once you remove them out of the way, you've got Shia LaBeouf playing up against a 30-foot giant robot from outer space who really, you know, unless you start developing these guys into some kind of meaningful way, he's just talking to a robot. And all of these secondary characters, you know, like Leo and things like that, they're all one trick exactly. Like, from beginning to end, Leo never changed.
To one point here, I mean, the whole mom going away thing, that's exactly what my mom did when I left for college. And I'm like, that is exactly what most parents do when their baby leaves for college. So the mom starts crying uncontrollably, and dad's like trying to, you know, play it up. I mean, I almost feel like the parents need their own TV sitcom on a weekly basis, because I feel those that would be great to do. But obviously, you know, it'd be like, you know, a lower budget and obviously look like crap because now it's related to Transformers. But I would almost want to see those guys as a separate movie in themselves.
You know what? Like, this is kind of one of those things about Revenge of the Fallen, which I almost wonder if we as the fans are our own worst enemy in some ways, because a lot of people say, or a lot of people said after the first movie, hey, look, there was no Transformers. You gave them no backstory, blah, 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 blah. You know, next one, we want more Transformers. We want more history and all of that stuff. And that's what they gave us in this movie. But what I think is, like, I think the beginning of this movie is infinitely better than the end of the movie. When they got into this whole crap about the matrix of leadership and the pulling the power out of the sun, which is so Transformers. But if you look at the beginning of this movie, imagine, right, that the movie had followed how it was at the beginning, which is the US government is completely and utterly untrusting of these Cybertronian beings who are there, who, to be fair, have pulled a bit of a fast one. They've gotten asylum on Earth, but they're not giving the humans anything for it. They're, in fact, Optimus Prime says at the beginning of this movie, we're not giving you weapons because you're more dangerous than we probably could ever be, and that's why we're keeping all of this away from you. Imagine this movie had taken on the thing of humans versus Transformers, regardless of faction. Instead, what they then end up doing is they start going into this bizarre, weird thing of, you know, that scene in the army base where the humans turn on the Autobots. Why would Ironhide, who is this weapons specialist put up with that. They've just lost their leader. He's dead, and they're treating him like a piece of like scrap metal. And the Autobots just keel over and give in.
You know,
the beginning of that movie should have had a completely different ending to what they had, which was this embarking on spirituality randomness, which was poorly executed. I think take the things in your movie which are the strongest, the human characters, because for God's sakes, the Transformers aren't the strong point of this movie, like in terms of character, because they don't have one.
They are better than the first one by far.
Oh, yeah.
Especially,
yeah.
You know, Megatron and Starscream have actual personalities. Well, I guess that's just it. It's like saying like Revenge of the Fallen has more robot personality than the original Transformers movie is like really not saying much.
Yeah,
there really
was
nothing there in the first movie. So,
but like, say for example, take Starscream. Starscream in that movie. Oh, Megatron, it's so good to see you. And all the time I'm like, shoot him in the back, shoot him in the back. No, they removed that part of his personality. They removed the power-hungry, treacherous part of his personality. And it's like the one thing that Megatron does is he says, you left me there to die. And he says, well, I was trying to save the hatchlings. Okay, fair enough. How did Starscream know that Megatron could be brought back to life? Okay, you can accept that. But the problem is that the Decepticons themselves, all of their Megatron was reduced to the lackey. Yeah. Starscream had, I mean, imagine this. Imagine at the end of that movie, the Megatron and the Fallen are on top of the tower, and all the way through, Megatron has been like, you know, yes, master, three bags full. I'll go kill Luke Skywalker for you, my emperor, and stuff like that. And then just as the Fallen gets the key, Megatron guts him right in the back and basically says, do you think that I would serve anybody for as long as I have without getting something in return? I don't intend to play second fiddle to anybody. Instead, his character is just swept aside to being Starscream. My face has been blown off. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, I couldn't understand why he was doing anything for the Fallen, and I totally agree with you. Where is my Megatron? Where is the Megatron who screamed out into space when he had, like, you know, falling apart? I belong to nobody. Remember that? Mm. Remember that? I belong to nobody? Where was that guy? I'm all for retconning it into the third one too. I couldn't deal with this version of Megatron. Like, what was he doing there? Why did he care?
And I mean, just going back to what you said there, I mean, previously about how, oh, these guys have got more personality than the cartoon does, because ultimately the cartoon, I mean, you know, it was a kid show. But you look back at the 86 movie, what does he do? I belong to nobody. I am me. And at the point of death, he gives in and he says, okay, look, I'll do what you want. And then the minute he finds Unicron's weakness, what does he do? He goes straight back to Unicron and he says, look, buddy, I've got the Matrix now, not Ultra Magnus. I didn't destroy it like you wanted. You're going to work for me. Granted, it didn't work out. But that is Galvatron / Megatron. Then Galvatron,
wouldn't it have been much better to have, instead of the Fallen showing up out of nowhere and pulling the Matrix out, which was, again, another really silly point in the movie for me, if Megatron had taken it and gone back to the Fallen and said, I have the Matrix now, I'm the boss?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been 10 times as enjoyable?
You know, I mean, it could easily, they could still have done the whole thing with the Primes where he's like, I can only die if a Prime kills me. And then Megatron says, well, what about a Matrix-infused Megatron? You know, whack.
Well, even if the Fallen just swatted him down like Unicron did in the movie, was like, yeah, right, you know, like you're going to use that against me. But that still would have made Megatron Megatron. Even if he was wrong and stupid and got himself like half killed in the first 3 seconds, it would have been like, that seems more like Megatron.
And
Megatron the lackey was just really hard to buy. Especially when you retcon the Fallen in. Like, Megatron reports that he's lost the Allspark that they've searched for millennia with all like the sorrow and vigor that it's like, yeah, I'm sorry, they only had 2% milk. I couldn't get a hole. You know, and there's like the geriatric Fallen who's been sitting in this chair, let me point out, for thousands of years going, that's all right, I didn't really want it anyway. You know, like, isn't that what happens in that scene? He's like, what I really want is the Matrix. And Megatron's like, oh, well, I'm glad I waged that intergalactic war to get you that Rubik's Cube then.
And like, my disappointing thing, I mean, going off Megatron, but Starscream, I don't know, did anybody else feel in the first movie, you know, when Starscream's taking out the jets over Mission City, and Starscream and Megatron is fighting Optimus Prime, Starscream at one point starts leading the jets, and where do the jets end up? Right on Megatron's doorstep.
Yeah, I noticed that, like, too, but I always really chalked that up to poor cinematography.
See, I didn't, because I'm like, I know Starscream, and I know Megatron. And if Starscream can gain the upper hand any way he can, then that, you know, what would it have taken for there to have just been a scene in there where, you know, he comes back.
Why did
back,
he shoot Megatron. Any of the jets then?
Well, it was.
Wouldn't
it
he have wanted
too,
all of the jets to come with him and do that?
Wasn't it rumored too that Starscream at some point, Megatron says something, and it was taken out of the script that, well, you shot at me first, and basically it was, you know, going back to the first movie where Starscream might have been one of the jets that was shooting on Megatron.
And if that was the case, then ultimately that's a disappointing thing that Starscream didn't get that. But then again,
I think you guys are
wouldn't Megatron have slagged Starscream on the spot in the ship?
Yeah,
he thought he fired at him in the city.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking, is like, in this movie universe, you probably couldn't get away with having Megatron just be like, oh, well, look, you betrayed us once, but don't do it again, or else, which is
what he did.
And
now come be my second in command again.
Yeah. So maybe ultimately that's, you know, if you want to have Starscream in it and things like that, ultimately you've got to keep that out. But at the end of the day,
I think a nice big Starscream betrayal should be part of a third movie.
Well, it seems like the whole character, and this is what, you know, they've said previous times before, is that this isn't supposed to be Generation One, and that they, you know, they paid homage to Generation One, but that they're starting fresh with the characters. And I think you guys are trying to equate this too much to what we know from Generation One.
It's very Generation One. It's even, in a lot of ways, for a live action movie, I'd say these films have been more Generation One than they should have been. And they only pull out the, well, this isn't Generation One shtick, when they really are kind of caught doing something character stupid. You know, and it's really like, well, if you're not doing the Generation One shtick, what are you replacing it with? A bad version of it? You know what I mean? Because that's usually what people are complaining about. It's like, wow, you didn't do that very well. And they go, oh, well, we weren't trying to do it at all. Like, well, what were you doing then?
To be honest, you've hit the nail on the head there with the whole, oh, it's not Generation One. Then why are you using all of the archetypes of Generation One? Prime's the heroic leader. Ironhide's the tough guy. Ratchet's a medic. You know, at least in animated, they went, okay, look, we're going to have Prowlin, but he's going to be a ninja. And he's going to be like, one with nature. That's like, okay, we're taking the name Prowl, but we're creating this completely different character.
It was far more of a departure than the movies really had the balls to do.
Yeah, and the problem is, I mean, obviously I know you're a big fan of the comic books. I'm sure you've read Reign of Starscream. That Starscream in that comic is not the Generation 1 Starscream. In that comic, they portray Starscream as a true disciple of the Decepticon goal and ideal. And Megatron is this crazy fringed lunatic who, now that he's gone, Starscream can build the Decepticon Empire to be up to what it's supposed to be and all of that. And what do they do in the movie? They take him back to his stereotype. He's a coward, he's a wimp, and he's Megatron's lackey. So yeah, the argument of, oh, it's not Generation One, then why are you constantly just free?
Well, no, that, and you know what, that does make sense, and I will give you, I will succumb to you on that point. So I think you guys are, from my standpoint, I view the movie as a whole. I think that it works as a whole. It's entertaining. And I'm thinking that, you know, as fans, we're being very nitpicky and going through every little bit and piece. Now, granted, there are some flaws that I have with the movie, but it's not nothing that a good editing job couldn't have fixed. You know, in fact, if anybody knows how to tell me to convert DVDs to editing format, I would love to make my own cut version of the first movie, and then also
that's why the first movie's so bad, because You could make like an 82-minute version of it that would make more sense.
Well, I mean, I really want to make my own, like the guy did for the Phantom edit, where he took the Phantom Menace and cut out all the stupid Jar Jar stuff. I really, you know, as I'm going through watching this movie time after time, I'm thinking, well, you could cut that out.
You know, and that's really the definition, a lot of ways for me, of something being poorly made is by how much is unnecessary.
Well, I think that could, but see, that's the thing, is that I don't think that, I think if you cut out a couple major scenes, like the stopping at the tailgate and the short guy, you know, it's stuff like that.
Cut Deep Roy out of the movie? Come on.
Yeah. It just I mean, the only point that served for, and then I'm, well, they identify Sam there. So, but then do we really need to show that? Because, you know,
there's simpler ways to do that. I get you. Well, no, that's just that this movie had less to cut out than the first one by far. I mean, I think this is, I enjoyed this movie a ton more than the first one. I am going to buy this movie on DVD and I'm going to watch it on occasion. I may even watch it all the way through, which I cannot say for the first movie in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Well, then that's a perfect way to end this.
Can we just say, to end it on a cheerful note, ILM excelled themselves in this movie. Can we just take a few minutes just to go through the good points of this movie?
Yeah, let's talk good for a minute. There are good points to this movie.
The opening scene of this movie is spine-tinglingly good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think we're spoiled because we're so used to computer graphics that this wasn't possible 5 years ago with technology. I mean, I think this is the modern-day Star Wars epics because this is really breaking ground for a lot of movies to come in terms of special effects.
And special effects wise, it's absolutely fantastic, but I'm just not willing to be dazzled by that. I'm not going to like stand by like, okay, the effects are good, I forgive everything, you know.
But I mean, not only that though, as well, but and criticize me or crucify me if you want. Megan Fox was a billion times better in this movie. She actually did.
She brought a real performance to this. I don't think she was given very good lines, but she brought a real performance, I think, better than Shia's, to be honest. And I think that actually had something to do with his hand. I don't know if anybody else noticed, but there were scenes where he was really on and really off.
Oh, definitely. In fact,
and I really felt like this is medicated Shia. This is unmedicated Shia.
I think that some of it, too, was the way that the editing was, especially in the desert scene, was done specifically. Like somebody was complaining that Wheelie disappeared at certain points of the movie. Well, I think that's just because they didn't want to show the hand that much, because as soon as you saw that, I'm like, aha, these are the scenes now with the hand. I mean, it stuck out like a sore thumb, because obviously, you know, we talked about it. But
well, I think it's funny, too. They were like, we wrote this into the movie to make it make sense that his hand was hurt. And it's like, he's like thrown through factories, dropped out of helicopters, hit in the head by police cars. All sorts of stuff happens, and like he goes through the space bridge, and his hand is injured. That's some skillful writing in there.
I agree with you that
your Academy Awards in the mail, guys.
I agree with you. It's like, oh wow, that's how he hurt his hand. I was figuring Megatron, when he was interrogating him, would be the way that he would do that. But
yeah, maybe it was in that car that got dropped off of a helicopter. I would have thought that would be a good opportunity to hurt your hand.
We're trying to wrap this up here.
Should have had him lighting a cigarette and be like, whoa, you know.
But anyway. I think we could go on and on about the movie. The more I watched the movie, the second, the third time, the more I enjoyed it, because it gave me a chance to actually stop and watch for scenes that I really wanted to pay attention to. My biggest complaints for the movie was the editing and the fact that things were going on so fast, which I don't know if they did that specifically to try and hide things or if that's just the style, but there were a lot of times I just wanted a rewind button on this movie. So I'm curious to see what's going to be like if I watch in slow motion on my DVD player when we finally get the DVD. But all in all, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a good action flick. I realized that there are some plot holes with it, but quite honestly, I really didn't see the plot holes till I started listening to the fandom. And I don't know if it's just because that we're, you know, we're fans, that we're a little bit more nitpicky because this means something to us and holds us, you know, a special place in our heart that we get, you know, very emotional when things don't seem to go our way. And I think if we just relax and sit back and take it for what it is, then it might be not as bad as a lot of people are making it out to be.
I'd say just the opposite. I say if we dropped our fandom, we'd be panning this 100%.
I know, but I'm trying to end on a happy note here, Ender. You're missing the point of my speech.
All right. The only happy note, that forest scene where he fights those Decepticons off, even though he dies at the end, where Prime fights in Megatron and Starscream,
awesome.
that was one of the high points of my entire life, was watching that scene in IMAX. I enjoyed that in ways I can hardly describe. I listened to the music from that scene off the soundtrack over and over again. That was fantastic. And that's about as cool as Prime has ever been. So can't argue with that. And that was worth the price of admission.
All right. Well, that being said, let us... Jace, I know you're still there, and I know you feel like you can't contribute anything, but do you want to say anything to wrap this up? Or maybe even, since you know me so well, would you say, am I giving this movie a fair shot with my beer goggles or not?
Oh, no, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I don't really have much else, like I said, you know, to contribute that hasn't already been said. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I think you're being a little too forgiving in some things because you do have a tendency to just love everything Transformers. But then again, perhaps, you know, the opposite end is that we have a tendency to be a little bit too harsh on certain things. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's your opinion. I mean, and you seem to have the most positive outlook of, you know, any of us on it. So, you know, whatever.
All right. Well, with that being said, let's conclude this Transformers Revenge of the Fallen review. And let us take a quick commercial break. Translation, Anthony has to go pee. And then we will come back and we will start the news and pick it up from there. Sound good, guys?
Excellent.
All right. After these messages, we'll be right back. So there you go, folks. That's part one of our show. So join us in a couple days where we'll have part two, which features, the actual news in the last 2 weeks. So thank you for listening, and we'll be talking to you soon.